Cindy Barnes is a councillor who runs an HSP group, highly sensitive people group, in Cookham, that her people are actually all this area in the Thames Valley. And she has almost 300 members of this group. And these members actually get advice from Cindy and realise perhaps that she, your sensitivity is not necessarily against what you should be doing in life. So I would like to welcome Cindy. Morning, Cindy.
Good morning. Morning, Malcolm. Thank you so much for inviting me here today.
Great to hear you. And you live in the Cookham area, do you, or the Bonnet?
Yeah, I live in Cookham, yes, absolutely. Been there for 14 years.
Right. And tell us about HSP, because is it the only one? I've not heard of such a group before.
It's not very well known at all, even within the sort of psychology professions. It's not very well known at all. It was discovered about 20 years ago by a research psychologist in America. One in five people are found to have the genetic trait. It's actually a genetic trait, and it can be traced to particular genes. It's equal in men and women, and people are often hugely relieved when they find out that they might be highly sensitive.
Right. Before we go any further, yeah. Cindy, we did a little questionnaire just before you arrived, which has been quite a bit on the press recently, and it was talking about whether or not you're highly sensitive. And I gave 11 questions out, which I'm sure you've seen before. But I just want to give the score out of anyone who's actually sort of ticked any of those boxes. If you tick between 7 and 11 boxes, it is extremely likely that you are an HSP. If you ticked fewer than 7... but those are extremely true of you, you would be justified in thinking yourself as an HSP, especially if you ticked boxes 1 to 5, 8 and 9. And since I didn't give out the numbers, you won't be able to ever know that. So what do you think of these tests? Do they actually sort of... how do you evaluate people in that way?
I don't know that particular short test, but there is a slightly longer test of 26 questions, which has been whittled down from the original piece of research, and it's actually, there's a link to it on my website, and there's a link to it, that there's links to the research, but that particular whether it's the same questionnaire, I don't know, because I haven't seen it, but the questionnaire, the 26 questions questionnaire, has been scientifically validated many times.
It has,
yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
it's accurate.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So that's the 11 questions we've just asked. Do any of those sort of ring true in how you'd evaluate or help people?
I can't without... they're very similar.
They are similar.
Yeah, they're very similar, yeah. Very similar.
So,
yeah, I don't think there's one about sort of going out of your body, dissociating at difficult times, but they're similar.
I think what that's saying is that you go into a sort of another world, really,
yes.
And just create a veneer around you.
Yeah, it's too much, because a lot of high sensitivity is about being able to cope, well, first of all, knowing, and then being able to cope with your emotional self. And highly sensitive people have a much richer and much stronger emotional life than those who are not highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. And it's often difficult for those who are not highly sensitive to understand the intensity of the emotions and the intensity, not just emotions, but intensity of thinking, intensity of everything.
Is this genetic?
It is.
Right.
Yeah, it is genetic, yeah. And it's been proven to be genetic, linked to particular genes to do with the serotonin system. And it's also found not only in humans, but it's been found in at least 100 other species of animals, including some fish. I know, it sounds
really?
Amazing, doesn't
okay.
it? But there are researchers all over the world researching this. In the scientific community, it's called sensory processing sensitivity.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And is this something new, Cindy? Has it always been there but not researched and not identified?
Yeah.
Or is it something to do with the modern way of living?
It's always been there. We think the researchers think that it's a survival. If you think about highly sensitive people, and I'll talk a little bit about what some of the traits are of highly sensitive people, because it's not just emotional sensitivity, it's also, there's a few other things as well. But the part of the theory is that we need highly sensitive people. We need the 20% for the survival of our species, because the highly sensitive people are the ones who will see danger before it's happened. They'll be able to see on the horizon that the weather's changing and there may be a horrendous storm coming and you might have to put all your crops inside or your animals inside. They're the ones that will see that the tiniest changes to plants or rivers or the weather, and actually notify the rest of, you know, in old societies, notify the rest of the tribes. The problem is today that we tend to pathologize these people, you know, us highly sensitive people, and think, oh, you must have a mental illness, you must have a mental disorder. That isn't the case. It's just an extreme sensitivity of the nervous system.
And then we might be inclined to give someone a label. I was working with someone recently, and the label she got was, she's very shy.
Yeah.
And the message that went with that was, we're concerned because if you're that shy in the world, you won't be able to survive.
Yeah.
So what she was sensitive.
Yeah.
But she got the label shy. So for most of her life, she said, I'm very shy.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, she was much more empathic than...
Absolutely.
...than people realised, and her parents realised. And she lived with that label of being shy, which she would stand in a room and just observe what was happening in the room and sense who was doing what, who was who, and who could be trusted and who not.
That's very common. It's called, within the community, it's called pause to act. And highly sensitive people, if you think about going into a party, I'll call them the 80%, because it's 80 and 20. So the 80% mostly would just go into the party, just see where everything is, see where the food is, see where the drinks are, see where the toilets are, see who they knew, who they didn't know, not necessarily think about it. The highly sensitive people, the 20%, would hang back. They'd look at the windows. They'd look through the windows first of all. They'd see where are the exits first of all, because it's always about how do I get out, and how quickly can I get out. Do I know where everything is? Do I know the lay of the land? Do I know the toilets? Do I know where the food is? Do I know anybody? Do I want to speak to anybody in there? And they will do all that very quickly before they go in, and it's called pause to act.
So that's a very valuable, as you were saying, in terms of survival, because there's some people who are very spontaneous. They act before they think, and suddenly discover that they're in a situation that's unsafe. So the sensitive person would be taking it all in first.
They take it all in first. Highly sensitive people are often, it's often said that they can't make decisions, or, you know, they take forever to make decisions. That isn't actually true. It's just that they've done all the research up front. So therefore, to the 80%, it seems like it takes them forever. But by the time they've made a decision, by goodness, that's a really solid cast iron decision that they've made.
So that would be somebody who gets a label of procrastinating or indecisive again, because they're not making the decisions in the same speed that others, the 80%, expect.
Yeah, and the way that I like to think about procrastination and HSPs is it's a little bit like cows who have multiple, you know, cows have multiple stomachs, and they need to, if they eat different types of grass from different types of pastures, they've got different types of, it takes them, it's a different time with each stomach to process the grass, and it's a bit like procrastination. So if HSPs take on too much in any one time, they just get overloaded with, I can't process all this. I can't process all these different grasses in my different stomachs. I need to go and have a lie down. I need to go and rest. I need to go and take care of myself.
So I could imagine if there's in a working environment, if there was somebody like that, and somebody who is a pushy, they would be pushing to get an answer, to get a decision, for goodness sake. Mm. And of course, that's not going to help. That's going to push the person deeper
stress,
into overwhelm.
Huge stress and overwhelm. And I've been working with a number of people recently, and some people in our group, about seeing this as a diversity issue in the workplace. So absolutely seeing it as a diversity issue, because, you know, for instance, the thing that I noticed the most when I came in here is if I was working, I mean, I know you two guys are sitting away from the light, and I've got the light shining in my eyes. But I'm just thinking, for a highly sensitive person, that would be completely overwhelming. Completely overwhelming.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, I was just about to reach out to the light.
Did you start this process of discovery yourself? Because
I did.
You were sensitive.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Malcolm is going to move those lights a little bit.
Thank you.
He's now going to put them on to me. This is better.
So, but a highly sensitive person, actually, I read somewhere that one third of the people who are HSPs are actually extroverts.
That's true, and I'm one of them.
Are you?
I'm an extrovert, highly sensitive person.
Yeah, are you an extrovert to manage your sensitivity?
The difference between introverts and extroverts is where you get your energy from. So if you're an introvert, you tend to get your energy from yourself. If you're an extrovert, you get your energy from other people. Most highly sensitive extroverts, they absolutely need self-care in the way that all highly sensitive people, they need downtime, they need to be on their own. I'm not shy, so I wouldn't be shy about going into a situation. I wouldn't be worried about... I still would be worried, but it wouldn't affect me in the same way that a very introverted HSP might affect them.
That's very interesting, because I think I can put myself into that class. And if I go into a party and people aren't talking to each other, it's the beginning of a party, I become an extrovert and I engage people in conversation, get them talking to each other. Then it happens, the buzz starts, and I back down and I move away.
Yeah. So you're a good facilitator in that way. And HSPs tend to be, because we notice a lot. We notice, we're very observant, we're generally very kind and respectful, and we want the best from other people. And we instinctively know what other people need, often before they know themselves. So we'll go out of our way to make the situation nice for other people. And
so
make it...
society needs people like us.
Absolutely.
So that with designers or people who is that attention to detail as well? So people who will like things to be in a certain way.
There is a little bit of perfectionism that can, you know...
There needs to be.
The little bit of perfectionism, because we notice everything. So, you know, if that isn't straight, if the coffee mug isn't straight on the table, there's something... And it's not an obsession. It's not so much an obsession. It's more about an aesthetic. It's more about, oh, that looks beautiful. You know, that just feels right. It just feels beautiful because it's all nicely placed.
If I go in hotels, if I'm walking on corridors, I'll straighten the pictures. Or if I'm in a room where there's a mirror or something, and find it difficult not to.
I painted the wall for a friend of mine from a bright red down to a dull sort of colour. And it took five coats, and neither my friend nor I were satisfied.
Yeah. Yes.
So it went on. But time for a bit of music, Cindy and Dermot. You suggested something called Ironic by, I hope I get this pronunciation right, Alanis Morissette.
Morissette,
yeah. Now, she's been very involved in sensitivity, and
she has
awards for the film she's done in that, as well as the music. Anything you'd like to say about her before we kick off?
She's become the sort of a bit of a poster child for the highly sensitive person, because she has worked with Elaine Aron, who's the researcher who identified the trait 20 years ago. And Alanis Morissette features in the film, the documentary called Sensitive, The Untold Story. And highly sensitive people are often very, very creative. Not necessarily musically art, but obviously Alanis is. She's a great advocate for how you can have a career, a very high profile career in the spotlight, and be highly sensitive and very successful.
Okay, this is Ironic.
You just didn't take, and who would have thought
You're listening to Mid-Morning Matters with Dermot Fitzpatrick and Malcolm Parr. And we have Cindy Barnes, who leads a group in London and in Cookham for highly sensitive people, which is social, educational, teaching, supportive, the whole spectrum of special support that people who are sensitive would probably appreciate. Cindy, you were telling me you were inspired by that music to tell me about your the two areas you work in. You work in London and in Cookham.
Yes, yeah, I've been holding the Cookham group for about the last 3 years, and earlier on this year I started the London. Well, it was already running, but I've taken over a London group. So, yeah, we do socials and a bit of, as you said, education and a support, and it's a support group.
Is that part of a wider organisation?
It's not. It's just what tends to happen is highly sensitive groups sort of spring up all over the place, usually for social. So there is another one in London that's purely for creatives and what they tend to do is they tend to go off and go to different art galleries and exhibitions as a social thing. But actually, so there are quite a few HSP groups that are springing up all over the place.
You were saying that the social element could be great fun.
I've had people come to the social where they've absolutely hated social gatherings before, absolutely couldn't stand social gatherings, and they've come to one of the HSP social gatherings and they've said, this is a transformative experience. I've never before been with a group of people, 20 people or so, who are very respectful, very welcoming, and as concerned about me as I am about them. You know, it's just an unusual... It's an unusual social setting to be in when you meet other highly sensitive people, which is why I'm so passionate about the groups.
Right. Do you need a balance of sensitive and less sensitive people to enjoy a social environment?
I don't think highly sensitive people do, no. No, I don't think highly sensitive people do because because often it's easier to talk with other highly sensitive people.
Yeah, I know one highly sensitive person who would get very concerned about going to a large supermarket. Mm. And I think some of the supermarkets are trialling periods of time where if you do have a particular concern, you can go around without all the lights on, mm. without all the music blaring, mm. and without long queues. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a couple of them trialled it for Autism Awareness Week, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think they did it. I think it was specifically aimed at people on the autistic spectrum
Is sensitivity a marker on the autistic spectrum?
They're
totally
very
separate.
The highly sensitive trait is very, very different from the autistic spectrum. Very, very different. The reason why it sometimes gets mistaken is because of the sensory sensitivity. Mm. But it's very, very different. It's not. People often come to me and say, people think that I'm on the autistic spectrum, and I can say to them very clearly that they're not. But the sensory sensitivity does have a lot of overlap. So being very sensitive to the clothes that you wear, having to cut the labels out of clothes, sensitive to light, to heat, to sound. To foods that you eat, all of those are they're one aspect of sensitivity is very similar.
Hmm. I was within a restaurant in the high street a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't notice. But we sat down, and then he said, "I can't stay here. I can't stay here. It was just too noisy. There was too much happening, and he couldn't wait to get outside. We had to find a restaurant that was nice and quiet." You can see how there must be cinemas which are very loud and sound systems, or busy shopping environments, and that way where there'd be a cacophony of sound that would be quite disconcerting. Mm.
And all highly sensitive people are within the trait, everybody's different, because some people will have high sensitivity to smells, for instance. Mm. Other people won't. Some people would be very sensitive to light. Other people won't. So the range of what people are sensitive to and what they're not sensitive to will be different within the trait.
And is the medical profession is that an awareness about this growing?
Very little. And that's why I'm delighted to talk to you this morning, because it's something that actually needs to have much more publicity about the highly sensitive trait. People, I think, still hear lots of articles written about high sensitivity, and people still think it's just a made up thing. It isn't a made up thing. It's been there's a lot of research behind it, and it's been validated, and it's continuing to be researched a lot, which is great news.
Well, many of us know people who are sensitive. We just give a label of some kind. Oh, this is sensitivity, or doesn't like noise, or something. Mm. But it's not necessarily seen as a condition. And also, looking at the positive aspects of it,
it's interesting, because I think when you first find out that you're highly sensitive, depending on where you are and what career you've got and everything else, people can go through it's almost like going through the grief curve. Of first of all denial, and then a bit of resistance, and then there's a bit of grieving that happens, of almost having to let go of who you thought you were, having to let go of, and then there's huge relief of, oh, this explains so much. This explains so much about me, and now I can start to embrace it. So I think for some people it takes a while before they can start to embrace it, but I talk about high sensitivity with people as when you get to the point of really embracing it, it can be like a superpower. You can see things that other people can't see. You smell things other people can't smell. You know things that other people don't know. So it can be like a superpower.
I was thinking, as you were describing it, in the nicest possible terms, the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
Because you were saying this, there were no animals, or very few animals, caught in the tsunami. Mm. They all went. They could see something. Mm. Something. The word went out in the animal kingdom. There's something coming, and they all headed for higher ground. Mm. Whereas the humans were saying, "Oh, look at that! It's a big wave coming in. Oh my gosh!" Mm. And suddenly there is somebody who has a sensitivity could be really valuable in terms of as a gift.
Incredibly valuable. And what I think our challenge is to translate that to the modern day workplace. You know, so I've worked with people who are policemen who are highly sensitive, and you know the things are starting to change. But you know, he was able to sense when there was going to be some trouble way before his colleagues could, and actually go in and with a gentle intervention and try and break things up and try and, you know, because he could see he could actually read all the signs and see what was going to happen.
Body language,
way before,
eyes, yeah,
way before, and then deal with it in a very empathic way that wasn't going to escalate, that was going to be very, very gentle. Now, it's very difficult if there are just one or two people doing that. It needs to be seen as a positive, you know, almost like a diversity issue, but because it's huge positives with the trait, huge positives.
Are there professions that sensitive people would be more? What's the word?
Drawn to,
or yeah, so that their skills would be more needed.
Psychotherapists and counsellors, definitely.
Of course, the people business.
Definitely. A lot of the helping professions and caring professions, the problem is when it becomes too institutionalised and it becomes too stressful. So I've worked with many teachers who, you know, wanted to go into it absolutely for the right reason, but the whole structure of how schools are run and the classrooms just became too stressful. Nurses and doctors. There are many, many different types of professions. A lot of artists, you know, a lot of creative people, a lot of musicians, a lot of artists. Highly sensitive people tend to do a little bit better if they can work on their own terms or have their own. You know, we're very, very creative, very good strategists.
Mm. Does that mean they're not particularly good team players?
They can be good team players, but if you imagine a mixed team where the highly sensitive, and I remember it from I used to work in, I worked for many years in corporate life, and I, you know, my boss would regularly describe me as a pain in the B-side.
Indeed.
Because I'd constantly be saying, but look at this over here, look at this over here. And you go, oh, for goodness sake, here she goes again. Mm. You know, so you have to have a good balance of people who you have to be taken seriously. Mm. Thankfully, I was eventually, but it took a lot out of me. But you have to have a good balance. And ideally, people need to know about the trait so that they can say you're not just whining and just not just going, but look at the danger over there. Look at what's coming over there.
It's a little, it reminds me of, I know it's not autism, but this young 16-year-old Swedish girl, Greta Thunberg. And she's got autism. She's on the autism spectrum. Mm. But she can see things. Mm. She sees things so clearly that because she's thinking in a particular way. Mm. And she can see, and she's kind of wondering, why can't they... Mm-hmm. Why can't they see? Mm-hmm. And I guess it could be the same in a
it's similar
business,
yeah.
Where you're saying, look, if we continue on with this strategy, can't you see that this is going to end up not working out?
Yeah. Elaine Aron calls highly sensitive. Elaine Aron is the woman, is the American psychologist who researched and identified the trait 20 years ago. She says, she calls, this is rather grandiose, but she calls HSPs the priestly advisors. You know, in old societies, we'd have the warrior kings. We'd have the warrior kings who would be the ones who would go out and fight and defend the people and defend. And then you'd have to have side by side the priestly advisors because the two need to work together.
Mm. Like the magician or the alchemist or
the priestly advisor is the strategist, is the one who keeps all the balance and keeps the emotional balance and keeps the balance of the tribe. And the strategy, while the warrior king goes and fights and does all the stuff that the non highly sensitive people are better at. So we need both. We actually need both.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's stop there just for a little bit of music. Someone You Loved by Lewis Capaldi, and just to lighten the mood slightly, a lighten or thoughtful mood perhaps.
this time I fear there's no one to save me. This all and nothing really got away, you're driving me crazy. I need somebody to hear, somebody to know, somebody to have, somebody to hold. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you numbed all the pain. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. I'm going under. This time I fear there's no one to turn to. This all and nothing way of loving, go be sleeping without you. Now I need somebody to know, somebody to hear, somebody to have, just to know how it feels. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you help me escape. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. And I tend to close my eyes when it hurts. Sometimes I fall into your arms. Into nightfall, you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love, but now the day bleeds into nightfall, you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting to be it, so what you love to let my guard down and let you pull the rug. I was getting kinda used to be it, so what you love.
That was Someone You Loved by Lewis Capaldi. And we were talking about labelling from a young age, whether someone's sensitive or ridiculed perhaps by their peers in the playground or whatever. It was interesting to know what are the things, the four things I understand that can characterise an HSP, Cindy?
Yes, Malcolm. So we talk about DOES as an easy acronym to remember, so DOES. And highly sensitive people are characterised by D stands for depth of processing. And depth of processing means you think about things more than the non-sensitive people do. You think about things longer. You might be, you know, negatively, you might be called an overthinker. It's not overthinking. It's just that the depth of processing is you think about the life, the universe and everything. And then the next minute, I might be thinking about what's the content of those cookies that are on the table in front of me.
Ah, so it's like, I didn't see the cookies.
You can do everything in a split second, think about the meaning of life and also think about what the content of those cookies is, all in a split second. And for most people, they think that's a bit odd. But for highly sensitive people, they're perfectly normal. Perfectly normal. So depth of processing is one thing. The O stands for overstimulation and overwhelm. Highly sensitive people, because of this processing, and brain scans have shown that we have, there are more centres that light up in our brain than the non-sensitive people when we're asked to look at certain things and faces and facial recognition and things. Because of all this process, we get much more easily overstimulated, and therefore if you get overstimulated over a period of time, it leads to complete overwhelm, and overwhelm can lead to burnout.
Mm.
So you have to be... Self-care is absolutely critical for highly sensitive people, and learning what the boundaries are of your overwhelm, your overstimulation. So that's the D is for depth of processing, the O is for overstimulation and overwhelm, the E is for emotionality, being very much more emotional and being very much more empathic. So range of emotions and feeling emotions much more deeply and for longer. So just looking at an advert on the TV might, you know, dissolve me into tears, for instance. And walking into a room and intuitively knowing what other people need and what other, you know, that deep empathy. So E is for emotionality, emotional depth and empathy. And the S is for the sensory sensitivity. So sensitivity to light, to sound, to heat, to cold, to food, to clothes, all the sensory things. It can be, when you work through some of the obstacles that are often put in highly sensitive people's ways, or when they don't realise they're highly sensitive, it can be the benefits can be absolutely incredible. You know, you can walk down a street in the spring and see a leaf uncurling on a tree and be so moved to tears by that. And it's a it can be an absolutely beautiful, beautiful thing. Because the depth of experience is so much stronger.
Mm. And what would you say to parents who are listening who may have a child that is exhibiting some of the sensitivity that we've been exploring this morning?
The first thing I would say is have a look at the highly sensitive child test, because as there's a scientifically validated one for adults, there's also a scientifically validated one for children, for parents to do about their children.
And where would we find that?
You'd find it on you'd find it on Elaine Aron's website, which is hsperson.com.
HS,
highly sensitive person, hsperson.com.
One word, yeah.
And you'll find three self-tests on there. One is the adult one, one is the child one, and the other one is called the high sensation seeking one. Mm. So the first thing I'd say is if you've got a child who is highly sensitive and fulfills the criteria of the highly sensitive child test, and it, you know, isn't something else, the child isn't on the autistic spectrum or sensitivity for other, you know, for other reasons. If your child fits the highly sensitive person criteria, then there are learn as much as you can about it. And there is a book called The Highly Sensitive Child, written by Elaine Aron.
Highly Sensitive Child.
The Highly Sensitive Child.
Quite often, I suppose, being in the genes, as you mentioned earlier, the parent would also be sensitive, perhaps,
yes,
and understand the children's needs.
But they may not know that they're sensitive. Lots of parents are sensitive, lots of people are sensitive, but they may not know it, particularly men. You know, because we have, in our Western culture, it hasn't been, I think things are changing rapidly, but it hasn't been appropriate for men to be over-emotional, for men to be over-thoughtful. It just hasn't been necessarily appropriate. So I've met lots of highly sensitive men who didn't know that they were sensitive, and thought that there was something inherently wrong with them. You know, why am I feeling so strongly about this? Why is this happening? You know, it's because you're highly sensitive. But it's the culture that we're in.
It's a cultural thing, isn't it? Big boys don't cry and keep stiff upper lip and keep it to yourself. Don't show emotion. Don't
it's
show
very
fear.
Much a Western thing, because there have been studies on high sensitivity done in Thailand and done in China and done in other countries, where high sensitivity is actually seen as a major benefit, a major asset for men and for men and for women.
Well, if you're applying for a job in America, they look at IQ and EQ, and some jobs require more EQ than IQ, or a balance anyway.
I'm surprised that you say 20. It's an equal number of male and female, because my experience is that most men that I've experienced in my life, we're not actually connected with emotions. So I haven't met many men who I would say who are uber sensitive.
It's men have learnt to cover it. Men have learnt to okay. mask it and to cover it very well.
So your experience in the groups that you run in Cookham and in London, so there's a mixture.
Yeah, there is absolutely a mixture. Absolutely a mixture. And we for 2 months ago we ran for the first time. We ran a group specifically for highly sensitive men.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because our next guest. So a telephone interview is from the Mankind Project. That run training. Are you familiar with the Mankind?
I am familiar with the Mankind Project. Yes, yeah.
What's your connection with them?
I just know of them, and I know various people that have been done training through them. Yes. So I just know them. Yeah.
So that's specifically as well to not just as I understand it, getting men to connect in with their with the aspect of authentic masculinity, which includes all of the emotions from grief, joy, fear, and anger.
Yeah,
and bringing those into balance in life.
Yeah.
So this, it's great work. Thank you. Thank you for the work.
Cindy, we've got just a few minutes left, and I just wanted to talk about your work and how people can actually tune in and join you and the groups and where they go and how to handle if they've recognised the fact they are HSP or think they might be. Tell me about where you work.
I work... the groups run from... There's a group that's running in Cookham and there's a group running in London. If people would like more information, I'm also a counsellor who specialises in working with highly sensitive people. If people would like more information, the information about the groups and the work that I do is on my website, which is Cindy with a C, C-I-N-D-Y, dash Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S.com. Cindy-Barnes.com.
Okay, that's an easy one.
And there is a lot of self-help that people... One of the reasons I set the group up was because I know that people don't always want to go to individual therapy and they can't always afford to go to individual therapy. And the idea of building communities with highly sensitive people, I'm absolutely passionate about because it's that connection with other people, that community that we so desperately need.
You've got one or two events coming up?
Yes, the next one is in... there are a couple of events in Cookham. The next one is about the intensity of emotions and sometimes how you have to let go to be able to grow. And that's on the 16th of June, I think it is. And then the next London one, I think, is a social, and there is a... And then there's a session about finding out about some of the latest HSP research, and also followed by a discussion and support group. So they're all on. They're basically meetup groups. So you have to sign up for meetup, which is free. It's a free thing you just sign up for, and the links to both of the meetup groups are on my website.
How long have you worked with meetup? Is that a sort of fairly new organisation?
No. It's just a platform. It's just a platform. It's just an easy way of organising events and having people sign up.
So could you give us your website address one more time?
It's Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, dash Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S.com.
So that's a hyphen.
Yes, a dash.
I always confuse the dash.
It's one of those, yes.
Yes, as opposed to the under, the underscore.
It's not the underscore, underscore. Yeah.
And the other one, website for Elaine Aaron was hsperson.com.
If you just go to my website, there are links. There is a link on the highly sensitive person page to Elaine Aaron's website. So if you don't, just remember my website, and there's a link to her website on there.
Great.
Cindy, thank you so much for coming in this morning. I've learned an awful lot.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure to meet you. And thank you for your work.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
Do help yourself to a biscuit in front of you. Thank you, Cindy.
We'll get those lights changed.